hear the worshipers? Where's all of my praises? I want everybody around the world to put your hands together because all the praise belongs to God. Here we go.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Null. Today, I'm going to be doing more of the issues that involve your interest. We have a voicemail line now where you can call 24/7 and leave your question or your thoughts. That number, and I'm going to take it today, 862-800-6805. Again, 862-800-6805. I had an entire hour yesterday devoted just to the challenges to the entire health community. That means everything from organic movement and the non-GMO movement to staying healthy, preventing disease, using a plant-based diet, homeopathy, naturopathy, holistic and complementary medicine, holistic nursing, holistic dentistry, yoga, mind-body medicine, all of that has been challenged by Wikipedia and its anonymous editors. So I spent the entire hour on that. The article is published online, the program you can download. It's now up to the people interested in seeking to challenge Wikipedia and the people behind it for their misinformation campaign, their denigration campaign. Let the media know that they should have been investigating this, and they didn't. We did. And that was yesterday. So today, I'm going to not have a guest so that I can spend more time addressing the issues that you find important. So write that number down. This way, anytime you want to ask a question, you can. 862-800-6805. You can also go to the archives 24/7, download 5 shows with a single call at 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Let's begin with the latest on health and healing. This is the University of Hong Kong, and it starts about connection of children to nature brings less distress, hyperactivity, and behavioral problems. There was also a time when I was growing up, many of you were growing up, where we had recess. We could go out, we could yell, scream, play. That was healthy. We spent more time in nature. That was healthy. Today, kids spend very little of that time in nature. So city lifestyle has been criticized for being an important reason for children being disconnected from nature. This has led to an unhealthy lifestyle in regards to active play and eating habits. Even worse, many young children do not feel well psychologically. They are often stressed and depressed. 16% of preschoolers in Hong Kong and up to 22% in China show signs of mental health problems. Recent research shows that spending time in nature may bring many health benefits, and many environmental programs around the world are trying to decrease nature deficit and child nature disconnectedness in order to improve children's health. For example, the World Health Organization says that in order to monitor implementation of the Farm Declaration, a commitment to provide every child with access to green spaces to play and undertake physical activity, it set up a 300-meter target. 90% of the Hong Kong population lives within 400 meters of such an area. However, despite the extensive greenness, families are not using these areas. They're spending too much time on their computers and cell phones. So the takeaway message is simple. If you want a healthier child, if you want a healthier adult, a healthier senior citizen, get out into green spaces. from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. New review shows plant-based diets benefit athletes' heart health, endurance, and recovery. Now, you don't have to offer this information to the Natural Living and Running Walking Club and the approximately 40,000 athletes that we have worked with, or people who became athletes, because it was all based upon a plant-based diet and proper supplementation and physical activity. But for all the other athletes, a meat-free diet, from tennis champion Venusa Williams to Formula One Lewis Hamilton to Derek Morgan of the NFL's Tennessee Titans, have already proven the performance-boosting power of a plant-based diet. Now, plant-based diets for cardiovascular safety and performance in endurance sports, a new scientific review published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients, adds further evidence that a plant-based athlete benefits from improvements in your heart health, performance, and recovery. So that's good news for all the athletes. Now, from Hebrew University in Jerusalem, a breakthrough study finds another compound in cannabis with powerful anti-inflammatory properties. With the movement to legalize cannabis for medical and recreational purposes, scientists are able to look more closely at the unique components of this plant, learning ever more about the positive effects it have on our physical mental health. A recent medical study in Israel looked at how an organic compound in cannabis can help to mitigate inflammation. There's your arthritis, cancer, and of course diabetes and heart disease. Quite simply, chronic inflammation has become a serious health issue in our society today, caused by the introduction of adulterated and processed foods and toxins in our environment and insanely high levels of stress. Some doctors and researchers even suggest that inflammation is the cause of most modern diseases. I would concur. Therefore, natural solutions to stopping inflammation are critical to health. So the Israeli study conducted in late 2018 and now in 2019 looked at how compounds in cannabis can positively impact inflammation. And there is what is known as CBD, cannabidiol. It's one of the compounds in cannabis that has wide-ranging medical benefits, and it is one of the lesser-known compounds, what are called terpenoids, demonstrating how to mitigate inflammation. Quite simply, the terpenoids, often referred to as the terpenes, are volatile aromatic oils released by the cannabis plant when flowering. And different chemicals that they're able to take from this and then infuse in oils and then take into the body can turn off inflammation. So, one more reason why we should be bringing these 22,000 studies on our official PubMed about cannabis to the public attention, and we should do five things in as soon as possible. One is to legalize all cannabis. Two, have a proper independent educational program showing that the cannabis oils, these are not psychoactive, but strongly physiological, can help everything from seizures to strokes, from autism to Alzheimer's. Next, we should have a lot of independent, non-big pharma studies commissioned to show what other diseases it might impact, like cancer. Then we should take everyone who's in prison for drug possession and let them go, and then finally expunge their records so that they have the same as clemency or same as a pardon, so they have no records, so they can regain their sense of self in a society that's not prejudiced against because of their incarceration. Just some suggestions. Now, a lot of people travel by air. According to Griffith University, which is in Australia, you're going to be in a petri dish because it's an enclosed environment with up to 200 or 300 people coughing, sneezing, and those filtration systems are not able to get rid of all that bacteria and viruses. But something in your body can protect you. So if you're traveling by air, even by train, elderberry, elder, E-L-B-E-R-B-E-R-R-Y, elderberry, E-L-D-E-R-B-E-R-R-Y. It protects you from travel stress while boosting your immune system response. That's right. And I'm a big believer in elderberry. I take it every day because it's just one of the best things in the world to prevent the common cold. And it also helps you be less vulnerable to stress and contracting and spreading communicable diseases. And it's been used for a long time to challenge colds and influenza. And that's what they found at both Griffith University as well as Queensland University of Technology in Australia. They examined whether elderberry extract could help prevent or improve respiratory symptoms and the mental health of people traveling by air. And they worked on 312 people, and it worked. And they compared them to a placebo group. And so elderberry is great for your immune system and great for when your body needs to be strong. Also, a high intake of dietary fiber and whole grains are associated with a reduced risk of non-communicable diseases. This is from the University of Otago, which is in New Zealand. So I'll just give you the takeaway message, which is people who eat high levels of dietary fiber and whole grains have a lowered rate of non-communicable diseases compared with people who eat lesser amounts. And also you have a better glycemic load, meaning your blood sugar doesn't fluctuate. And this was published in one of the most respected medical journals in the world, The Lancet. And they were suggesting around 25 to 29 grams of fiber. I'm suggesting 45 to 50 grams of fiber. And the results suggest a 30% decrease in all cause of cardiovascular-related death. Wow. That's a huge number of lives saved. But also, from diabetes, over 24% saved. So, worth taking your fiber. And finally, we're told historically, look at your aunts, your uncles, and your parents for clues to longevity. I say that is only one piece of the puzzle, because what if you are like me, and all of your aunts and uncles and family eat the same diet, have the same lifestyle, and end up with the same diseases? That does not mean that genetically there is an association. Because I was the only vegan I knew of in our hometown, Parkersburg, West Virginia. I didn't know of any others. If there were, there could have been. I didn't know. But I was mocked and ridiculed for it. I didn't care. They're all dead. That I do care about, because they were wonderful people. So the idea that everything's in your genes is simply not true. Your choices can make an enormous difference. Oh, and by the way, Roswell Park Cancer Institute, published in Oxford Journal, wasabi, W-A-S-A-B-I, you know, that's that green paste, that what's called Japanese mustard. You put it on, you know, let's say a nori roll, and it really tastes great. So if you, unfortunately, most people only know it from eating sushi, which I'm opposed to, and you should too if you looked under a microscope, which I've done at raw sushi. You see these little worms underneath there. But you might have noticed that your meal usually comes with a green paste. That's Japanese horseradish. Not everyone likes this pungent Japanese condiment, but according to the study, it could be the key to curing cancer. That's right. And that's because of a substance I've mentioned many times in this program called isothiocyanates. And isothiocyanates are are very strong anti-cancer, especially treating cancer of the bladder. Very powerful. But if you want to get more of the isothiocyanates naturally, bok choy, cabbage, cauliflower, horseradish, kale, kohlrabi, mustard, radishes, spring greens, rutabaga, turnips, and watercress all have this compound, which is very good for you. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 15 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to ask Jesse, who just sent me an email and said, you've got some voicemail. Okay, Jesse, let me hear the voicemails and we'll address them. So now we're going to go to that part of the program where we address your issues. And these are people called in our line, 862-800-6805. Back in a moment.
If you stay,
stay, darling.
Stay in my corner.
You'll make me, oh, so proud.
Hey, my name is Kelly, and my question is for Gary Noll. Gary, I'm a vegetarian because I'm against cruelty to animals. However, I still cook antibiotic-free chicken for my dogs. I hate buying it. It feels wrong. And I know I'm supporting factory farming, but I want to give my dogs the nutrition they need. My question is, do dogs really need meat? Thank you.
No. In fact, I'll use a personal example. In 1988, I had two puppies, sisters. One was called Beautiful, one was called Sweetie. They were long-haired miniature Dachshunds, and I wanted to try an experiment. I'd already been working, helping people with their pets, and I wrote a book on it, Natural Pet Care. I did a special that played on PBS stations called Natural Pet Care, where I could show how you could bring a pet back to good health or improve their health and have longevity depending upon how they were treated and how they were fed. Even the quality of the water they drank. One was given the highest quality diet possible, but it contained meat, and the other was given a non-animal vegan diet. And I used supplementation to make sure that they had the full spectrum of essential fatty acids and DHA, EPA, vitamin C, and they both live extraordinarily long, healthy lives. In fact, both died because of accidents, 22 years of age, and she was still running like she was a puppy, and the other at 23 years of age. That proved to me at least that the myths that you must have meat, and most of people end up with short-lived animals because they're feeding them box food, some form of dry kibble, and also giving them a meat-based diet, which is frequently filled with hormones, antibiotics, growth-stimulating hormones, lots of toxins, and nothing else. They also are not exercised enough, and they're not given enough quality time. All that will contribute to the longevity of an animal. But the scientific literature also supports that we do not have to give this. In fact, there was a review of the journal Animals that showed that there are a lot of studies now, not just a few, but over a dozen studies that both cats and dogs maintain on vegetarian diets, providing you supplement the amino acids that the cats need that they generally get from fish, can be healthy, including those exercising at the highest levels and indeed experiencing a wide range of health benefits. And these diets have been associated with the benefits like improved coat condition and allergy control and weight control, increased overall health and vitality. You get a reduction or elimination of arthritis and diabetes and cataracts and decreased incidence of cancer and infections and hypothyroidism and ectoparasites, that meaning fleas and ticks and lice and mites. And even Tufts University concurs that the answer is yes. Technically speaking, dogs can survive and even do very well on a vegan or vegetarian regime. And while it's commonly believed that dogs are carnivorous, like their wolf ancestors, meaning that they must eat meat to survive, this is not correct. This is a myth. So that's the case. So it depends upon how intelligent you are in doing it. For example, every morning I make a special drink for myself, and it generally lasts about 3, maybe 4 days. And it has a lot of different compounds in it. It has a full spectrum of chlorophylls from green plants and red pigments and nutrients from fruits and berries. All told, I'm going to suggest between the two powders, the red and the green powder, probably around 40 different plants are involved. Then essential fatty acids, coconut oil, flaxseed oil, and then also that contains a lot of fiber, which is important and very good for an animal. And then even olive oil, which is extremely good for an animal so they don't get constipated, and also they have healthier coats. And then plant-based protein. You can get that either from split pea, from brown rice, from non-genetically engineered soy. And so that's the basis. Now, I give all of the animals that I take care of at the sanctuary, I give them all that drink. And then I wait an hour, then I give them a full meal. For example, I might give brown rice with peas and corn and string beans and broccoli and Brussels sprouts, asparagus and parsnips and sweet potatoes and let's see what else, and a scoop of steel-cut oatmeal with some maple syrup in it. And they just devour that. And then you don't feed them all day. You give them a smaller little meal in the evening. You give them pure, purified water. And you let them run. Animals have to run and play. And that's healthy. Then you brush their teeth each morning. Because if you don't brush the teeth and stimulate the gums and get rid of the tartar, they're going to lose their teeth. And also you make sure they're getting all of that pigments that help prevent cataracts. So having worked with more animals than the average person, over 3,000 of all species, and having the longest lived ringtail lemur in the world, 33 years of age, that is twice the normal lifespan. That's because of the diet and the attention you give them. So hope that answers your question. Let's take another call.
So, sir, hello. My name is Max. I have a question for you. I have some college friends that I went to school with in college, and now they have families in California. And their kids who are in elementary school, while at school, are being pushed to take vaccines and being told that they don't need their parents' permission. Can you speak to this? Thank you.
California has a legislature that's been substantially compromised by the pharmaceutical industry. To prove this, we got the actual amount of money that each of the yes votes on mandatory vaccine legislators received from the very companies making the vaccines that would be included in a mandatory schedule. And it's right there in black and white. Give the money to the California legislators, they vote on mandatory vaccines. We then sent each one of these legislators more than 40 articles from the peer-reviewed literature on why these vaccines were not proven safe nor effective. In fact, Gardasil, that is supposed to deal with the human papillomavirus was the most dangerous of all. And there was no good science on it. Even the developer of it challenged much of what had been said about it. And we also got the information from the vaccine court. If a vaccine is so good and so safe, then why is it that the federal government and through the U.S. Health Resources and Service Administration on the official federal vaccine injury compensation program reported that the total amount of awards to children and adults who had been injured or died after receiving federally recommended and childhood vaccines, including those recommended and mandated in the state of California, surpassed $4 billion. That's correct. So, and the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act was passed in 1986, and it's a federal compensation system alternative to vaccine injury lawsuits filed in civil court. And it's very hard to win in that court. But if you look at over 18,000 claims have been resolved, and where they've shown that the vaccine is what injured the person, including causing autism, by the way. So that's the reality. Now, how likely is it that a parent would advise, yes, vaccinate my child if they were aware of all the information? Los Alamos is a community. To work in that community, as a scientist, you have to have an advanced education. There are a lot of PhDs at that community, and women and men. They had the lowest vaccine acceptance rate in the United States of any community. Now, let me just see here. The majority are women. They have advanced degrees, including doctorates. They've done their homework. They're very bright. And they've decided, after looking at the scientific literature, not to vaccinate their children. So if we really were legitimately concerned about honoring the women who are making positive choices, shouldn't that be an entire hashtag national movement? But it isn't. To the contrary, the left, unfortunately, has led the way in discrimination and attacking women without any sense of irony, who made the right choice by choosing not to vaccinate their children because they've studied the literature and they are informed, they're educated, they're empowered by that education and information, and they say no. So what do the other liberal community Democrats do? They attack that woman, call her irresponsible. Not just one, millions of women have been attacked. None have been supported. None have been embraced. There is no hashtag walk away from mandatory vaccines. Take back the choice of freedom of choice over your child. Look at the scientific literature. Read the reports of 2.5 million other women who took the vaccine, whose children end up damaged or dead. That's the utter hypocrisy and why I do not believe in any of the political movements. They're all corrupt. They're all vile. The two main ones I'm talking about. And especially the hypocrisy when it comes to supporting women. Yeah, not the women you should support. You're very selective. Why not support the educated women who, because of their education, because of their commitment to truth, will not vaccinate? But then we're dealing with California, and we're dealing with the entire corrupt system there. We're dealing with living in a non-sustainable environment. We're dealing with fire that is 24/7. We're dealing with natural disasters that are going to get worse. We're dealing with non-supportable water systems. We're dealing with the fact that 39 million people get their water out of the Hoover Dam and out of the melt-off, the runoff of the Rocky Mountains that are decreasing precipitously. So we're running out of water. So we should be concerned about everything concerning California, not just the fact that they've got the stupidest laws in the world, but they've got one big thing going for them. Boy, is it a big help. They've got a fascistic station, part of the Pacifica Network, called KPFA, that refuses to allow myself and others to go on there to challenge the pro-vaccine pundits, to provide scientific evidence that the vaccines they're mandating are not protected, are not going to protect the child and could actually injure the child. So then to allow a school teacher or a school nurse to supersede the wishes of the parent? If you're going to allow that, then you're accepting that you're living in a fascist state, in which case don't complain when the injuries come, because you did not challenge it, and you should have. Remember that notion when they came for the Jews, but I'm not Jewish, I didn't complain. When they came for the, I wasn't Catholic, yep. And that's what's happening in the completely fascistic state of California. I'm opposed to allowing anything to be done to a child without the parent's consent. Hope that answers the question. Next question.
Hi, Gary. This is Anna in Santa Rosa, California. My question is regarding uterine fibroids. Is surgery the better thing to do? Or can they be treated?
Well, I don't tell a person what to do. What I can tell you is, what would I advise my mother, my sister, my aunt, if they were alive or I had one? I would say, first understand, what do you think has caused this? These, what are also called myomas. They're benign growths. Now they can they will grow on the interior muscular wall, and they can also grow outside the uterus as well. And these tumors can be microscopic to several pounds in size. They can get very large, and they can cause great discomfort and pain. And the term fibroid, it's also not completely accurate because the tumor cells are not fibrous. They are abnormal muscle cells, and the position within the uterine wall determines what they're called, submucosal, intramural, or subserosal. And fibroids attach to the uterus by a stalk, as referred to the physician. About 30% of all women will develop fibroid tumors. Now, when I look at why, and I've dealt with a lot of women who've had fibroid tumors, I always ask, do you drink coffee? And I see this with fibrocystic breast disease as well. Yeah, well, stop the coffee. Why? Because coffee is highly anabolic. It changes the pH in the blood, and that can cause fibrocystic breast and fibroid tumors. It can also impact men's prostate glands. So the first thing you do is understand that more often than not, the diet or lifestyle has contributed to this. So get off all caffeine. Then go on to a plant-based diet and juice about 7 times a day. I would suggest starting with juices that are going to have a lot of the isothiocyanates, the very compounds I mentioned earlier on in the program. And I would start off with a base. Your base juice would be celery and cucumber, to which you could then add any of the cruciferous or isothiocyanate vegetables, kale and collard greens and mustard greens, arugula, etc., everything I mentioned earlier. But then also a berry juice is very good too, so you can make a juice out of blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, pomegranates, and cherries. Then I would take in coenzyme Q10 because it promotes tissue oxygenation, and that's what you need. Generally 100 milligrams twice a day, 3 times a day. Garlic would be very important because it also is very good against fibroids and uterine discomfort. And the garlic would be based upon eating the garlic. I suggest for palatability to eat the garlic in some meal that you enjoy. Also, you want L-arginine, generally at 500 milligrams, and you take this in the morning, and it enhances immune function. I would also look at maitake mushroom extract, M-A-I-T-A-K-E. I would also take vitamin A at 25,000 units, vitamin C to bowel tolerance, which for most people would be maybe 2,000 milligrams in the morning, 2,000 at lunch, 2,000 at dinner, and 2,000 before you go to bed. That is good because that promotes immune function and acts as a very, very good free radical scavenger. Zinc at about 15 milligrams. Now, here's where your herbs really make a difference. I've seen great results with dandelion root, milk thistle, also Chinese skullcap root, turmeric. I would use curcumin separate, and green tea, very powerful, and red clover and burdock root, both are good. And then, so any woman pondering a hysterectomy should give close consideration to what other procedures could be done, and because I'm opposed to just traditional hysterectomies, and I don't know how many are performed. I haven't seen the latest figures, but the last time I looked, it was over 600,000 a year. And what is called a hysteroscopic resection can be used to remove uterine fibroids. They surgically go in, and it's inserted through the vagina into the uterus, and the fibroids are removed vaginally, and the remaining area is cauterized. And this can be performed on an outpatient basis. So those are just some of the ways that I would approach this, but are there other approaches? I just gave you those other approaches, and you should consider those, and then at least you have something from which you can make up your mind and make a more intelligent, informed decision. All right? Let's see. I'm looking at the clock. We have time for another one there, so let's take another one.
Hello. Trying to reach Gary now. That's voicemail. Wondering a good program would be about Denmark and how they were very wonderful during World War II to all the people that were living in Denmark in World War II. And to all the citizens of Denmark, too. In Denmark during World War II. And I thought that would be an excellent program. And also a program on Walt Whitman would be wonderful. If you could do a program on Whitman, who was wonderful with the soldiers and helping the soldiers during World War II. So it was wonderful poetry and so forth. And I've mentioned before, if you do a program on urine therapy, which was an excellent program. Okay. So that would be wonderful.
All right. Well, I'm not quite sure what you mean about Denmark being very good during World War II. There were several countries that were neutral during World War II. Andorra, Ireland, Portugal, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, even the Vatican. Originally declared itself neutral at the start of the war. That was Denmark. And for most of the war, the country was a protectorate and then an occupied territory of Germany. The decision to occupy Denmark was taken in Berlin back in 1939. And Denmark was placed under direct Nazi military occupation in 1943. But Danish government and the king remained in more or less neutral positions. And the Danes fought on both sides. I believe about 3,000 Danes died directly due to the occupation, meaning southern Denmark was home to many Germans. Overall, however, the Danes were uncomfortable with being a protectorate. There was a small Danish resistance army, largely made up of communists, and generally they were realistic. They would only comply with Nazi control with some industrial and economic trade support in fear that Germany would create an economic collapse if they refused to do so. And the Danish army was demobilized, but it was permitted only, I believe, I could be wrong on this, about 2,000 plus soldiers. That's not even a standing police force, let alone an army. And news banned articles that would jeopardize Danish-German relations. And the Danish government arrested communists en masse. Anywhere you could find a communist in Denmark, they were arrested and frequently killed. But behind the scenes, the Danes were providing intelligence on everything that was going on in their country to the British. And through enormous haggling and and challenges Denmark eventually signed the Nazi anti-Comintern pact, along with a reluctant Finland, a pact against the Soviet. But Danes approved unanimously on no legislation to discriminate against Jews, and Denmark should join the Axis pact with Germany and Italy and Japan, and no Danish unit should fight against foreign forces. And most Danish Jews were rescued before the internment camps. Iceland, in fact, was self-governing, but held the Danish king as head of state and was occupied by Britain early in 1940 and turned over to the neutral U.S. and remained neutral for the remainder of the war. Also, the Danish ambassador to the U.S. authorized the U.S. to defend Greenland, also under Denmark rule. So it wasn't a Mecca where people would go to. I'm sorry, but the information is just wrong there. In fact, in 1943, the Danish government was tipped off that Germany planned to round up the Danish Jews to transport them to the internment camps, the death camps. And the Danes worked out a plan to have thousands of Jews leave en masse for safety. And that was heroic. And that was something that they should be proud of. To your question about Walt Whitman, he's not well known in America because we've lost our sense of the significance of history and historical figures. But I respect Walt Whitman. In fact, I used to read my daughter, when she was a young girl, I'd read her Walt Whitman stories and then ask her if she understood them and then discuss what they meant. He was associated with the Transcendentalist. That would have included Emerson and Thoreau. Whitman was also credited with being the most important poet-writer of the American Romantic movement. He focused mainly on nature and the environment and freedom and democracy. He was greatly influenced by Ralph Waldo Emerson. So if you really want to understand more about Whitman, read Emerson. Now, Whitman has been called on occasion the first beatnik, and his first major poem was written in free verse, meaning he was not using the rhythmed verse that dominated 19th century poetry and earlier. I believe his first poem was "I Sing the Body Electric." And one reason why the beatniks like Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac and were so influenced by Walt Whitman, and they were, and also I would add to that William Carlos Williams and Robert Creeley, and actually one of the few American fiction poets who had a huge impact internationally and influenced Pablo Neruda and the American-Argentinian novelist, essayist, Borges, and D.H. Lawrence, and Herman Hesse, and Thomas Mann, and Milos. He influenced a lot of people. But he was thoroughly American as apple pie, including the way he perceived himself. He was a very humble person. He was a writer. But here's something interesting. He was also named as one of the real fathers of the Cubist futurist movement, the art movements. He was also highly popular among some of the early jazz artists, especially in the 1950s when more free-form jazz of Eric Dolphy and Charlie Parker and eventually John Coltrane. He had a penchant for writing to readers in the future. Of course, most people remember Walt Whitman because of his Leaves of Grass, his signature magnum opus. First edition, I believe, was back in the mid-1800s, around 1855. By the way, Leaves of Grass was banned in Boston in the 1880s for obscenity. And he also wrote Democratic Vistas, the prose on American identity. And he wrote some work under a pseudonym, like Manly Health and Training, under the name of Mosey Velser. He advocated for nude sunbathing of men and women. That was something that did not go over well. And Song of Myself, That was a poem that focused on the full spectrum of human experience and individualism and self-reliance. Now, mind you, this was a time when very few people understood the importance of individualism. We were into a collectivist concept. And if you go back to something I mentioned on a recent program, when we have an opportunity, what do we choose to do with the opportunity? Do we choose to look at the problem from an honest point of view and say, what is my individual responsibility and perspective, or what am I going to do to lose my identity within the group collective? So he was one who appreciated the individualist, not just the group collective. He was not a part of the mob. And therefore, he talked about self-reliance. And his works have been set to over 500 musical compositions, including Charles Ives. He was a deist and skeptic with a hint of naturalism, pantheistic naturalism. He accepted all of them, but believed in none. He was either homosexual or bisexual, and because of the way he depicted love and sex in an early manner, he was often charged with obscenity. And in the early 1900s, he wrote an essay, and that was considered one of the most avant-garde things he had done. It was published in The Philistine. So it was Emerson who took the universe of thought and molded it into 1,000 gleaming sentences. Thoreau took the universe of thought and molded into a gleaming arrow dart's tip with an acid. They were different. Nietzsche took the universe of thought and emblemized them into the retorts of hatred to a poisonous spittle. That was all said about them. But Whitman was different. Whitman took the universe of thought and made it walk and talk and act and live. He was a person who believed in the spirit. He was a common philosopher. He believed in the natural habitation. And he was an advocate of Plato and the concept of the philosophy that declared to be living transcendental beings. And that was at a time when people did not see themselves as that, nor as life as that. Yet Walt Whitman taught no philosophy. He taught no metaphysics. He taught no creed. Walt Whitman was philosophy. He was metaphysics. He was creed. And when men came to hear Emerson talk, they also saw Whitman. He opposed slavery, but his nationalism has been criticized for failing to see the deeper racism in the American mindset. And also, I'm not aware, I could be wrong, that he did not go out of his way to criticize the genocide against Native Americans. If he did, I just am not aware of that, and that's entirely possible, or it's possible he did not. And why he did not, since he was so empathetic with the suffering of others, and he was the first to talk about and write about the pain of others. And there were a whole lot of Native Americans who were in pain. That's just a brief overview of Walt Whitman, but at least hopefully that'll give you some reason to dig further into his writings. And there's nothing that is not revealed in his writings. He reveals everything. He is open to criticism, and he is open to insight. I would suggest you read him. And that's it for this moment. I don't see any other voicemails. So if you would like to have your comments heard on the air, or questions, please call us. The voicemail line is 862-800-6805. If I can give some insight into an answer, I will be happy to do so. Now we're going to do this. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and I want you to hear what a Delphi Initiative lecture that was in Greece by a former World Banking executive talk about neoliberalism and how it's destroying the world. And mind you, and the man's name is Peter Koenig, K-O-E-N-I-G. The liberal community, the corporate liberal community, the corporate Republican community, both support neoliberalism, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama or George Bush or Donald Trump. They are all a part of this whole neoliberal community, and they should be challenged. We'll hear what he has to say.
You must be a special lady.
Who are you singing first, single, second?
No, Harry, I'm singing second, man.
And a very exciting girl.
I'll bring that bass out, man.
Hey, man, I'll bring it out a little bit more.
You gotta be a special lady.
Let's get down on some harmony, come on.
Cause you got me sitting on top of the world. Sitting on top of the world.
Somehow I knew.
Now, what are we confronted with today is the globalization. And the globalization, basically, that we are living is like a fetish of the neoliberals. The neoliberals who want to reduce the world to one culture, to one set of values, all based on greed, consumption, and maximizing profits. Neoliberalism was born only about 30 years ago by the Washington Consensus, actually less than 30 years ago in 1989. But it has expanded like brush fire around the world, particularly around the Western world, and today it almost totally controls it. It's a shame. Today in the West we are exploiting Mother Earth at the rate of 4.5 times its natural resources. Compare this with Africa, which is about 0.6%. And much of these natural resources that we exploit, and the growth of this has actually started particularly in the 80s. Most of it, or a big chunk of it, goes into the military industry, in the war machine. Over the past 20 years or so, much more than half of the extracted mineral resources went to the military industrial complex. We don't know that because the media don't tell us. And another shocker maybe, but it's also a fact, is that close to 50% of the US GDP depends on wars, conflicts, and related weapon sales to other countries. So if tomorrow peace would happen, the US economy would collapse. Neoliberalism is the killer plague of the 21st century. Neoliberalism is economic fascism. It is a criminal doctrine. Globalized neoliberalism privatizes public goods for private profit. Neoliberalism led Washington, led by Washington, with the shameful complicity of Europe has in the last 15 years killed between 12 and 15 million people by wars, famine, deprived health services through privatization, for example, forced refugees. Today we have about 50 million refugees and increasing, floating throughout the world and throughout refugee camps, where they disappear because they are not accounted for anymore, whether they are dead or alive, by statistics. Today, a small world elite of corporate and Wall Street CEOs and selective politicians call the shots. But they use puppets to run their show. Puppets like the President of the United States and the so-called leaders of Europe, They're nothing but puppets of this elite, this industrial and Wall Street elite. And they are served by a prostitute media. I call them prostitute media because they sell themselves. They are no longer honest as they used to be. Do we all realize that today 90% of the news we receive in the West come from six giant Anglo-Saxon media corporations? Do we realize that? So we are indoctrinated day in, day out by the same news. And one could almost say with Goebbels, if a lie is repeated often enough, it becomes the truth. And whether we want it or not, this is exactly happening today, and we have heard many of these examples this morning. For example, how Russia is slandered and how Putin is put down and denigrated all the time. I think if it wouldn't be for Putin, we would be already in a third world war, because he is a smart, very, very diplomatic person who has been avoiding conflict. He is not confrontational. And therefore, we have been escaping a serious conflict. Maybe the Third World War that would have happened in Europe within 100 years was avoided, I would say, largely thanks to Mr. Putin. Yet, the Western media slander him, put him down whenever they can, and the Western public believes it because they don't have access to the truth. Neoliberalism is also famine. Famine through speculation with food and agricultural staple. According to the FAO, famine and related diseases kill every 5 seconds a child in this world. Yet agricultural industry could nourish 12 billion people, almost double of what we have today. Even the World Bank, who is not exactly known as a left-wing organization, even the World Bank in a 2009 report has confirmed that about 80% of the 2008 famine and onwards, because it continues, killed hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, directly and indirectly, with the consequences of famine, was due to price hikes, which were due to food speculation, and food speculation goes on. It is a crime. Every child that dies from hunger.
Well, we're out of time, but the full interview can be heard on PRN.FM tonight at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour. I'll be live. The theme is, was there any spiritual meaning to the 1960s and its legacy today? Tobias Churton is regarded as the world authority on Gnosticism and Western esotericism and spirituality. He will be my guest. It'll be a great one, so please tune in at 7 o'clock. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.